month, I take time to talk in class about God's providence and history. And I thought this morning, just to, you know, as we talk about it, you know, it wouldn't be right to manipulate or contrive events to create a miracle. And I think you've seen some obvious evidence of God's hand in American history. But it is true that throughout history we can see clearly the hand of God moving in the affairs of men, to paraphrase Ben Franklin. And I think about so many people that talk about it. I don't understand history. I don't like history. But think about maybe a different view of it, and to study history in light of God's providence and seeing God move in the affairs of men. And because it truly is His story, and it's a fascinating study. And now we had talked about the American Revolution, and I've taken you through several battles and several events and how God moved in those events. And now we're going to move a little further into time, just a few years, but in 1783, England officially declared that the end of the war in America. They agreed that they had been defeated, and that brought a close to the war for independence. And in September of 1783, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, and John Jay went to Paris with representatives of the king, and they signed the official peace treaty, which is known as the Treaty of Paris. And the final document is much like many documents in American history. It contains explicitly Christian acknowledgments, and the opening line declares, "In the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity." And the Christian spirit of the American founders was very clear. Most Americans, military leaders, public officials, and almost all the regular population acknowledge that God directly influenced the events and had directly influenced the events in the birth of America, and they were not ashamed to say so. And so you see these things written in document after document. George Washington himself frequently credited God for the victories in the war and the freedoms that Americans would enjoy. In one writing, he said this. He said, "Glorious indeed has been our contest. Glorious if we consider the prize for which we have contended, and glorious in its outcome. But in the midst of our joy, I hope we shall not forget that to divine providence is to be ascribed all the glory and praise." And the reason I bring up George Washington so many times, and I want to show you, we don't have to be convinced perhaps, but I think it's good to know these things. As we live in a culture that purposely tries to destroy good people, and someone said that liberals write the history books, and so what's being taught in our schools, not our school, but in the public schools and public universities, are on purpose destroying good men. And so I talk about George Washington because I want to hold him up as if not the greatest man in American history, certainly in the top one or two greatest men in American history, and a great man, a great godly spiritual man. It's exciting that not only was he a great military leader, but he was a godly Christian. That's what's exciting to me. And you see it over and over and over in his writings. And so America had prevailed in its struggle for freedom. This is huge in world history. And it had become an example to the world of a free nation that had embraced biblical principles. That was not lost in the world, by the way. The world understood at that time that America had embraced biblical principles. So having won our independence, it is now time to establish a country. And maybe the war was the easy part. Now we have to come together and become a country. And the nation was actually formed under a document known as the Articles of Confederation. This is actually a pretty good document. It has a federal government. But the biggest problem with the Articles of Confederation is it didn't give the federal government enough authority. And this is on purpose, and we'll see why in just a minute. But it was given responsibilities and had laws, but it was given no power to enforce the laws or to carry out those responsibilities. Everything from money to soldiers to treaties to ambassadors was a problem. The Confederation Congress had a hard time raising money. And the reason for this is that the founders were afraid, the men that put that document together, were afraid of giving the central government too much power because they had seen the tyranny of Great Britain. We had just fought the most powerful nation in the world because of the tyranny of that king. And the founders were just deathly afraid of putting together a government, a central government, that could turn on its citizens again. Now think about what I'm saying. Those founders, it didn't happen in their lifetime, but look down the road. Look down the road 240 years. The power that federal government has. And all you have to do is go back 2 years to COVID and the pandemic, where the federal government was closing private businesses and shuttering, and everything. And that's the power that the founders were deathly afraid of. And unfortunately, it has come to pass, and probably will only get worse. But so each state, for instance, it was a loosely built document that the states had all the power, and that's not bad necessarily. But every state then had its own currency, and the currency even would fluctuate widely in between states. Some states it was more valuable. The next state, your currency for the state of Rhode Island might not even be valid. And so Congress couldn't pay its debts. It had promised pensions to the soldiers that had fought in the war. And so over and over, I could go on and on about this document, but it made the central government too weak. And something had to be done. After a few years, it was very evident that something had to be done, or there would be no unified America. And the country was beginning to fray, at its seams, just 6 years. So some proposed amending the Articles of Confederation to correct its deficiencies, and that was a good idea. But others, very strong and organized men like Alexander Hamilton and James Madison, they felt that something more drastic was needed. Then there was an event that happened that really is a small event in the big picture, but really changed the course here and made everything very important about this document. But in parts of Massachusetts, there were some farmers and men there, that war veterans, that began, because there were money problems and people had a real hard time with taxes and the money, just the issues that I've described, they, right or wrong, they moved on the courts and shut the courts down so that they couldn't foreclose on their farms and they couldn't give them taxes to pay because there was no money. And so they effectively shut these courts down. And the state Supreme Court arrested these men, and they said this about them. They said they were disorderly, riotous, and seditious persons. And what the court said infuriated the population. These were just farmers next door, and they were just trying to survive. And that infuriated the people. And so this little activism grew into a full-scale rebellion. And there was a man named Daniel Shays. He was a wounded war veteran. He organized a rebel army of more than 1,500 men, and he was determined to bring down, as he called it, the tyrannical government of Massachusetts. There was a small battle. About 4,000 men fought in that battle in Shays' Rebellion, and 20 men were killed. And it really generated fear throughout the entire country that this rebellion, just 6 years after we put our country together, would spring up. This underscored the real weakness of the federal government because it couldn't do anything. And most importantly, though, I would say, in my mind, what this rebellion did was it shook the retired George Washington to his core. It terrified him when he heard of what had happened. He wrote to his friend Henry Lee. He said, "I am mortified beyond expression when I view the clouds that have spread over the brightest morn that ever dawned in any country. What a triumph for our enemies to verify their predictions. We are incapable of governing ourselves." I just read Washington, you realize he was a real melancholy. He would really get discouraged about things, and he's just a human being. And he said that we are incapable of governing ourselves. And just a note about Washington. So he had retired 4 years earlier after winning the war, and he retired as commander-in-chief, and he returned to private life in Virginia. This was the highlight of his life, to go back to Virginia, to his wife, who he barely knew. He had married her and gone off to war. And he was just loved his retirement, just being a farmer there in Virginia. And this was very unique, though, that a military leader would win, would conquest like he did, and then turn and go back into private life. It's interesting that somebody said to King George in England, I think this is just as fascinating, King George in England, when it was clear that America was going to win the war, someone said to King George, he said that Washington would probably leave public life and go back into and go back to Virginia. And King George said this, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. Isn't that interesting? Great quote. And George probably could not have spoken more prophetic words in his life. And Washington wanted nothing to do with private life, but because of how close this rebellion came to undoing everything he had done, he decided that he would go back into public life. And a convention was called in the spring of 1787, and Washington decided at the last minute to attend, and he made the trip to Philadelphia to watch over what was going to be a Congress to amend the Articles of Confederation. And I can't spend more time on this. We'll take next week to finish it up. But the delegates were chosen from all over the 13 colonies, and everybody was asked to meet in Philadelphia. Those 55 delegates were asked to meet in Philadelphia to amend the Articles of Confederation, and that's what they came to Philadelphia to do. And when they came, however, the Virginians, led by James Madison, proposed in the very first meeting, in the opening morning, that they scrap the articles altogether and write a new document. And we'll talk about that next week and what happens. All right, men, if you'll come, we'll take our offer.